What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
It has been 1 year since Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich was detained in Russia. We'll get an update on the efforts underway to secure his release and look back at the joys stolen from him.
He missed engagements. He missed breakups. He missed time with his family. He missed Arsenal games. He missed games with the soccer club here in London. There's a lot of life that just sort of goes on without him.
Plus, the day's news. It's Friday, March 29th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. President Biden raised more than $25 million for his re-election bid last night at an event featuring former Presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, his campaign said. The star-studded event at New York's Radio City Music Hall, tickets to which cost up to $500,000, aimed to enhance Biden's fundraising lead over Donald Trump, whose cash on hand was less than half that of Biden's, according to FEC data, through the end of February. And while last night's crowd was stacked with Biden supporters, some tensions among Democrats were evident nonetheless, as pro-Palestinian protesters disrupted the event on a handful of occasions to criticize the president's handling of the war in Gaza. Journal foreign correspondent Stephen Kalin told me that disappointment over the failure to secure a ceasefire in the war and the release of hostages after months of negotiations is building in the U.S. and beyond.
They're really stuck on two main issues. One is allowing Palestinian civilians to go back to northern Gaza and get more aid into northern Gaza. And the second is this idea of a permanent ceasefire. Hamas basically wants Israel to commit to a ceasefire before the deal begins. And Israel, at this point, is refusing to do that. And so what's looming over this deal is the potential invasion of Rafah. There's over 1 million Palestinians sheltering there. So the human cost could be high. There's also then the potential political cost back in the U.S., where public sentiment has begun to turn against the conduct of the war. And as the presidential campaign season really gets underway, there's a possibility that this will complicate President Biden's path forward if he can't bring a quick end to this war.
Russia has vetoed a UN Security Council resolution that would have extended the monitoring of international sanctions against North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs dating back to 2009. Russia's UN ambassador defended the decision, saying Moscow would only be open to extending that monitoring if a time limit was put on sanctions, which he said were no longer helpful to resolving tensions on the Korean Peninsula. China abstained on the resolution while 13 of the Council's 15 members voted to continue sanctions monitoring, among them the United States, which along with its allies said that Russia was trying to limit scrutiny of a growing arms pipeline between Pyongyang and Moscow. Here was State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller.
Moscow appears to be intent on facilitating the DPRK's illegal pursuit of weapons of mass destruction, and its veto today was a self-interested effort to bury the panel's reporting on its own collusion with the DPRK to secure weapons that it can use to further its aggression against Ukraine.
Meanwhile, we are exclusively reporting that Russia has boosted imports of a key explosive compound used in the production of artillery ammunition, including from U.S.-based companies, in spite of sanctions meant to choke off its wartime production. That is according to trade data, which shows a major increase in Russian imports of nitrocellulose in recent years, something U.S. officials and analysts say is playing a pivotal role in aiding the war in Ukraine. We are exclusively reporting that major U.S. health insurers have agreed for the first time to start paying for anti-obesity drug Wegovy. That decision by CVS Health, Elevance Health, and Kaiser Permanente to cover Wegovy for certain people on Medicare with heart-related conditions should ease the financial burden on people who'd been paying more than $1,000 out of pocket each month for the drug. And should other health plans feel pressure to follow suit, it could result in billions of extra sales for manufacturer Novo Nordisk and competitor Eli Lilly, though not so much for insurers who are struggling to keep a lid on rising costs. and costs are also rising at the pump. While it's normal for U.S. gasoline prices to rise in the first half of the year, they've climbed at a faster clip in 2024, largely thanks to severe weather at home and geopolitical disruptions abroad. According to AAA, the average cost of a gallon of unleaded gasoline was $3.54 yesterday, a 3% increase from a year ago and about 14% higher than at the start of the year. An uptick that has helped make inflation stickier than expected in the first quarter and weighed on Americans' outlook on a largely robust U.S. economy. Later today, we'll get a reading of last month's Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, which should provide crucial clues on whether persistent price pressures are becoming a trend. Though with U.S. markets shut for Good Friday, investors will have to wait to react to the data. Coming up, we'll look back on the year that was stolen from Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and hear from the editor leading the charge on pushing for his immediate release. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
On March 29th, 2023, our colleague, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, was detained in Russia while on a reporting assignment. And 1 year later, he remains behind bars, held on an allegation of espionage that he, the Journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. 32 years old, and in the prime of his career, Evan should be sinking his teeth into complex assignments, traveling the world, celebrating holidays with his family, and enjoying life here in London. Instead, infuriatingly, he's stuck in a small cell in Russia's notorious Lefortovo prison, largely cut off from the world he was so curious to explore. But not fully cut off. Journal finance reporter Elliot Brown is among a small army of Evan's family and friends who has been corresponding with him through letters, trying to lessen his isolation after 12 months deprived of normal existence. Elliot, how have you managed to keep in touch with Evan? Just logistically, how does that even work in a situation like this?
One of Evan's many nice qualities is he has, you know, large flocks of friends, and some of those friends have set up a website where really anyone can email Evan, essentially. So they take an email and then they translate it into Russian and then send it into prison. And then he receives it and reads it. And if you're lucky, he'll write you back by hand.
How do you use that service? What is the nature of your correspondence with him?
I basically just give him office gossip, you know, updates on my life. So I tell him things I've learned and just try to give him a sense of what life's like outside, and I don't give too rosy a sense to make him miss it too much.
I'm certainly glad he's able to have that comfort, though it's a small comfort.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot that people love about being in prison. So he is in his cell for around 23 hours a day. He has Russian TV that he can watch and gets to meet with lawyers weekly, and he goes to court every few weeks or so where they basically extend his detention.
When we see him in court, in photographs and video, he's smiling often. Does that speak to what we understand to be his disposition in prison?
Yeah, as best as we can all tell, he is holding up shockingly well. He is a guy with a bright outlook who springs a smile at anything. There's this amazing Wire photo of him walking next to a man in a balaclava with a gun. And Evan has a huge grin on his face, like he or the soldier just said something really funny. that one made me smile.
He speaks to a deep reservoir of resiliency. Do you know what he's made of the last year? You wrote this week that it's been a year, in many ways, stolen from him.
Yeah, just pretty clear. He is missing out on a chunk of his very lively life and add particularly kinetic and vivacious time in it. So basically, there were a whole bunch of weddings. He has people who mean a lot to him who are getting married and You know, he'd RSVP'd yes to one that he had to miss. There are more coming this summer. He missed engagements. He missed breakups. He missed time with his family. He missed Arsenal games. He missed games with the soccer club here in London. There's a lot of life that just sort of goes on without him.
Elliot, thanks for writing to Evan. I'm going to join you on one of the next letters. And thank you for sharing all of this with us.
Happy to do it.
So while Evan may have ways to connect with the outside world, our number one priority here at the Journal has been to see him freed as soon as possible and to reunite him with his friends and family. Journal Assistant Editor Paul Beckett has been leading the charge in those efforts, pressing Evan's case to lawmakers and keeping his name in the news, not just in the U.S., but also around the world. Paul, we saw Evan's detention extended yet again this week, this time for a further 3 months. We still don't know when a possible trial would even begin. What do you make of that?
It's very difficult for us to make anything of it because it's so opaque. We've seen no evidence about the allegations against him. There's no timetable for a trial. In theory, the Russians should only be able to hold him for 1 year in pretrial detention before putting him on trial. But as we saw, they have extended that and they can essentially do what they want.
Considering that, Paul, can you give us an update on efforts to secure Evan's release? I know we saw, for instance, last month, Russian President Vladimir Putin saying he'd be open to a prisoner swap involving Evan if Moscow could make a deal with Washington. What are we hearing and what are we doing?
We've seen Putin mention Evan a couple of times in that context. He did it once at his annual press conference in December and again in his interview with Tucker Carlson. We saw in December the State Department said that an offer had been made for Evan and for Paul Whelan, the former Marine who's also unjustly held in Russia, and those conversations are ongoing. It is necessary and appropriate for those conversations to be secret in a sense, so we don't see everything that's happening, but we're confident that the US is acting on this and that President Biden will fulfill his promise to Evan's parents to bring their son home.
In terms of the road ahead, we did report this week that in this game of prisoner swaps, Putin holds most of the cards. He's got a lot of Americans detained. He's thwarted back-channel efforts to bring them home. Given that, what role is there for the public in keeping awareness of Evan's case high up there? It can seem a little dispiriting to think how high-level so much of this is playing out.
We remain optimistic, and we have to remain optimistic, but we also believe that all of the attention that we're bringing to this in the media, with individuals all over the world rooting for Evan's release, does create the necessary environment for the government-to-government negotiations that will ultimately free him to take place. We were happy to see last June the U.S. House of Representatives passed a unanimous resolution condemning Evan's detention and calling for his release. And that was an important moment for us to signal that this is a bipartisan issue. So making sure that he stays in the spotlight and doesn't fall prey to the distractions that inevitably beset any government is super important.
And there's also the precedent set here for other Americans held in Russia and for the many journalists imprisoned or under house arrest around the world, right?
Yeah, this is a frontal assault on press freedom. And Russia is such an important country. If you look at how many of the world's hotspots it's involved in at the moment, it is vital that we get fact-based information out of Russia. That's what Evan was providing. That's what a lot of reporters were providing before they understandably withdrew in the wake of his arrest. You know, I've been an editor for decades, and there's really nothing like one of your colleagues being put in a situation to make you realize how important journalism is and how important it is to protect your colleagues.
I've been speaking to Wall Street Journal Assistant Editor Paul Beckett. Paul, thank you so much for keeping up the fight.
Thank you.
And that is What's News for Friday morning. Today's show was produced by Hattie Moyer and Kate Bullivant. Christina Rocha was our supervising producer, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Otherwise, have a good weekend, and thanks as always for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day, but what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.